Well, now it's time to welcome a man whose face as well as his voice is well known on our TV screens, as Brian Curtoys was for many years the BBC's senior political correspondent. So welcome to Phoenix FM, Brian.
Thanks very much.
A rather more diminutive operation than you're used to at the Beeb, but we're a pretty friendly mob at least.
I'm sure you are.
Well, if you could just get in a little bit closer to the mics, thank you. Now, first off, did you always want to be a journalist, and what started you off in that direction?
Well, when I was a boy, and that was a long time ago during the Second World War, we just had the radio, there was no television, so like everybody else, I used to listen to all the programmes, especially the news, and I got this feeling inside me somewhere that I'd like to be like one of those people who read the news, and that's how the feeling started.
Well, I can identify with that. But clearly, you didn't wake up one day and suddenly find yourself as the political correspondent of the BBC. So how did you actually start out?
Well, one of the main routes to get into journalism then, and I think it still is now to a great extent, was to start on a local newspaper. And it was very difficult to get that all-important first job on in the newspaper world. I learnt shorthand, I learnt typing, and I wrote lots of letters to local newspaper editors. And first of all, I managed to get a job on a tiny newspaper in Hornchurch. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a very big newspaper, wasn't a very good one, but at least it was a newspaper, and it gave me valuable experience.
Does it still exist?
No, I don't think it does. Oh, it doesn't. Then I managed to get a job on the Ilford Recorder, and there I spent two very valuable years doing all the things that local newspaper reporters do. I spent a couple of years there. Then I went on to Nottingham, to the Nottingham Evening News. Mm. Then I came back to London to work for the Press Association National News Agency.
Right, so did you cover any interesting stories while you were doing this?
Yes, there are two I especially remember. One, when I was on the Ilford Recorder back in 1959, was the fire at Harrison Gibson's store.
I remember that.
That was anybody who lives near the area at the time will remember it. And, of course, it was a sensational story for the Ilford Recorder. Harrison Gibson's was in the High Road, and the store next door caught fire as well. And, of course, our feet didn't touch the ground. And at the end of the week, we had a bumper edition of the Recorder, and we sold a lot more copies, and we made sure the fire brigade got free copies because of all the work that they'd done. The other story I remember was when I was on the Press Association. One morning, I was the early morning reporter in the office, and the phone went, and a voice said, "BBC News here, have you heard anything about a train robbery in Buckinghamshire?" Well, that was the start of the great train robbery, so I was in on that. And funnily enough, it wasn't too long before most of the robbers were rounded up, and I was at Aylesbury Assizes on the last day of their trial when many of them were sentenced to 30 years imprisonment. So they're two stories I'll never forget.
Now, they're absolutely fabulous stories, because we didn't know what was going to happen later on with Ronnie Biggs getting out and all that sort of thing. But then you moved on to the BBC from there, did you? Because it must have been almost godlike and a heck of a job to try and get into there.
Well, obviously I kept an eye on the newspapers and the trade magazines for adverts, and one day I saw an advert in the Times, BBC requires general news reporters, so I wrote off, filled in an application form, and got an invitation back to have an interview, and I went to the BBC, and I was told to bring with me a prepared script that I'd written. So I wrote this as if I was talking to you rather than as if it was appearing in a paper. Went to the BBC and was shown into a room and read out my script, and that went all right. Then I was interviewed by some BBC News bosses, and that seemed to go okay. But after that, I was put into a television studio, and I'd hardly ever been into a television studio in my life, and I had to interview somebody I'd never actually met until that morning, and so it was rather a daunting experience, and the net result was I didn't get a job first application round.
But did they, I mean, they can't expect you to just interview someone blind. Did you have some notes about what he was to be talked about?
Well, it was all a long time ago, but I think they must have said who the person was I was going to be interviewing and what the subject should be about. And I might have been given a couple of minutes just to ask a question or two, but that's really what it was. But then, of course, often you have to do interviews, flying by the seat of your pants, and so therefore you just had to make the best of it.
I can imagine that was extremely daunting. But you, undaunted by the fact that you didn't get the job then, you went back again.
Yes.
You have the same thing happen?
I went through the whole process again, and this was about a year later. And, of course, I got all the experience of the previous time, so that was a great help. And this time I was offered a job as a news reporter, and that was really exciting because that's what I'd always wanted to do.
Did they again give you somebody blind that you had to interview?
Yes.
But
yes.
You were ready for it this time.
Yes, yes, yeah, yes. Yeah. And I think what had happened the previous time was that I'd stopped and started, and this time the interview obviously went much better.
Must have been a lot of fun. So what happened then? What sort of assignments did they give you to start with?
Well, in those days, you started off by working particularly... The BBC had a regional radio news programme called South East that used to go out on the home service after the 6 o'clock news, about 25 minutes. And I used to do quite a few stories for them. We also had a main news programme called Radio Newsreel, which we did national stories for. And eventually I ended up presenting that programme for a time. So that was all good experience.
Because that was on the light programme. We'd had about 7 o'clock, as
that's
I recall,
right.
Half an
yes,
hour.
Yes, yes, yes. And also, when the World at One came along, we used to work for them for a week at a time. Of course, at the same time, there was a lot of competition amongst us reporters to be working for television. And either you managed to get an attachment to television news for 2 or 3 months, or to the regional program, which was called Town and Around. But as time went on, then I found myself doing more and more interesting stories. I got sent abroad in 1967 to cover the aftermath of the Six-Day War between Israel and the Arab countries. And I also got involved with a few other interesting people. I once interviewed Bruce Forsyth when somebody started up a campaign called I'm Backing Britain.
Oh, yes.
And I got him to present to sing the song, so that was quite exciting. I once interviewed Muhammad Ali when he came over for a World Heavyweight Boxing Championship contest. I would be sent to Northern Ireland from time to time because there was a lot of trouble going on in there, which had restarted. And I encountered the Reverend Ian Paisley, as many other people did. And
yes.
The one other big name that I remember during my early years at the BBC, we had a programme that went out between 10 and midnight called Late Night Extra. And it was presented by a different disc jockey every night of the week. And we would work on it for a week at a time. And I always remember that the guy who used to come over on a Friday night was Terry Wogan. So it was very interesting to have been rubbing shoulders very briefly with him before he became an absolute star.
That sounds fabulous. You couldn't sort of leave some of his marks behind for us, could you? You never know. So at what point did you find yourself moving towards the political spectrum?
Well, I think coupled with wanting to be a journalist, I'd also wanted to get into the world of political journalism. I think it was interesting. One thing that obviously rubbed off on me was the fact that my father used to be, my late father was a local councillor at Southend. And I can remember once I managed to get tickets for the public gallery in the House of Commons when Sir Winston Churchill was answering questions. So that's one thing I'll never forget. And when I had spare time, when I was working in London for a time, if I had spare time, I would go and sit in the public gallery of the House of Commons to watch it all happening. And in those days, politics was really very, very exciting. So I think all those things together had reinforced my determination to try and get to Westminster.
So now you've got yourself into Westminster, and we know that the BBC has set the standard for, I guess, broadcast media in its impartiality of its reporting. But how is it for you as a reporter, who, like all of us, have opinions of their own, to suppress those opinions in your reports? Must be quite difficult.
Well, I think it was ingrained in me from when I started out as a newspaper reporter that I got to be impartial in my reporting. And really, there was, you know, it was one of those things that you didn't you didn't really do anything else but that. If you were doing, a report from Westminster, it might turn out on one day that the government would be in a good light, or the opposition would be in a good light. And if you had to make an assessment, you would make sure that you did it with evidence. So therefore, it's just one of those things that's, you know, if you cut me open, hopefully there will be the word impartial somewhere inside.
But going on from that, you could easily have had a run-in with a politician who's proved particularly awkward or even obnoxious. How do you cope with that and keep any antagonism you might feel out of the report? And indeed, how would you approach them next time around?
Well, I think those occasions were very rare. And if by any chance you found yourself up against somebody difficult like that, you would just really have to keep cool, to keep polite, and try not to let them off the hook. And of course, if in their broadcast they came over, as you say, awkward or obnoxious, then that would be to their disadvantage. But I don't think that really happened very often.
No, well, it's lucky if it didn't. But obviously, when you're sort of carousing the halls of Westminster, you've obviously going to run into quite a lot of politicians, leaders, parties, even prime ministers. And all of these sort of people, of course, they're going to be very careful with their spin doctors and, by their very nature, strong characters, and therefore very much past masters at avoiding answering questions that they don't want to answer. And how do you deal with that?
Well, I think to start off with, you had to try and make sure, assuming you were preparing for the interview and it wasn't just done like that, you had to try and make sure that you were well prepared in advance, and you would obviously want to press them as best you could in the interview. But of course, not answering questions has become part of the politician's equipment nowadays. I'm told that there are even courses for would-be politicians on how to avoid journalist questions. Now, when I would do my interviews, in the main, they would be, say, a 2 or 3 minute interview, and only a small amount would be used in our packaged report. I think you get the longer interviews, say, on the Today programme or on the Newsnight programme, and that's when you see much more in evidence the situation where politicians do try to avoid answering questions. And there was a famous occasion many years ago, I think, when was it Michael Howard was asked the same question 14 times and still didn't give the answer. So it's part and parcel of politics in the 21st century that you do get this sort of juxtaposition of, and some people listening will think the politician is avoiding the answer, and others will say, why isn't the journalist pressing him harder?
A very difficult problem, I would imagine. But were there any particular people that you found especially difficult, and any of that you really didn't like or get on with?
Well, I suppose one politician who was always had to be right on your toes and 100% prepared for was when you were interviewing Mrs. Thatcher.
Because surprise.
You could always be. You would never be absolutely certain which direction she might go. You know, you must try. You would have to try not to be thrown by her when you were interviewing her. But in the main, I got on all right. I got through them all right. That was the main thing.
So there were none that you really didn't like at all, or you couldn't get on with?
No, I think if you did, you'd just shrug your shoulders and get on with the next story.
Were there any of them that made a real impression on you, a real lasting impression?
Well, I suppose we go back to Mrs. Thatcher again. What I always think nowadays is that when you watch what's going on in the House of Commons, you don't get the great dramatic debate that you used to have years and years ago, when a certain MP would be up on the would be listed to be speaking in the Commons. You would see it on a television screen all round Parliament, and the chamber would fill to hear him speak. People like Enoch Powell or Michael Foot, Tony Benn, in Ted Heath after he was no longer Prime Minister.
Yeah, I see. Now, in these days of competitive reporting, if you're sitting in the Commons and listening to the exchanges, how do you pick up the wheat from the chaff to ensure that you've got all the salient points and that they've not been picked up by one of your competitors?
Well, learning to summarise is a really long-term experience. I think it even started in school when we used to have to do something called précis writing, and you would get 400 words and have to reduce it to 100. Mm. And when I started off on the local newspapers and on from there, you would sit there and try not to take too many notes, because if you took pages and pages and pages of shorthand, you'd have problems in trying to write your report. So it's a knack, I think, that you develop in time in getting the salient points. But, of course, every now and again, you might do a report and find that your opposition has taken on has done something else, and then you have to to think...
Much shuffling of feet.
Did I miss it, or are they wrong? And, of course, you know, it often does happen that when somebody makes a speech, there are two or three important points.
Now, a lot has changed since you started out doing this. I mean, we had the trial radio broadcasts of Parliament and later televising, which I believe you were involved in establishing. Now we've got the 24-hour news channels, even a channel dedicated specifically to Parliament itself. News is so much more instantaneous, and there's no need now even to develop film that you had to do in those days. It's all digital now. Does that speed of reporting make it more difficult for a reporter to maintain the ideal of impartiality in their reports, do you think?
Well, I think the one thing that occurred to me about this is that when you have the 20 continuous news all the time, a story will break, and you will only have one part of the story to start off with. And so the objective of the journalists involved in making preparing the report is to make sure that overall, that they do have the complete story. But there's no guarantee that you're going to get it at the very start. But I do admire the fact that today, so many journalists have to go live so often when a story breaks. It wasn't quite like that in my time.
I can imagine. It must be a nightmare. But what single piece of advice would you give anybody who's thinking of imparting on a career in journalism today?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think you've got to have enthusiasm, persistence, initiative, determination to get on, and also a bit of good luck.
I think you have to have a heap of good luck. Well, look, Brian, thank you very much indeed for coming in to seeing us today. It's all fascinating stuff. I hope you do enjoy your retirement if you can, because you don't get dragged into talking to too many people like me and doing all your talks. But thank you again.
Thank you.
It's our pleasure, believe me.